Just a quick warning that we're going to be talking about some addiction stuff, drug use in particular, about death and dying and existential dread and panic, about mental instability and New York City. So if you're not in the right headspace for that, maybe just skip these next two episodes.
Another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom podcast. I'm Sam.
And I am Nikki. And welcome to Same Old Man.
Hello. This is Same Old Man. We are here. You are here. We think. We hope someone's there.
We hope someone's there. I threaten people at the end of our divers recordings. But like, you better be here. You better come join us for this song. Because I know that some people dismiss this song. And I get it. Joanna didn't write it. So it's not like compulsively compelled towards it in the way that we are things that she's written. But Sam and I were just saying, she meticulously curated this album and she included this song on it for a reason. And so it deserves our attention.
100%. And I think that the inclusion of this song, at least in my own theories, is more about who, I guess we can't say wrote it, more about who sang it and who influences Joanna than the content of the song itself.
I like both. I like its context in history and its context in the album as it relates to the lyrics. I am interested in both things. A quick note before we get into the weeds of Same Old Man, that if you guys are interested in continuing our initial impressions series with us, where we just like briefly talk about each of the five new songs that Joanna performed at that life-giving spring recital, we're continuing that series on Patreon. Sam and I just recorded on Bombs Are Whistling. And we're going to include just a little 5-minute snippet at the end of this episode, just in case you guys are curious what it sounds like. So after the outro music to this episode, there's just a little clip of that discussion, which can be found in its entirety on Patreon. Okay, now let's get to Same Old Man and its sort of context in the album.
We're at a really interesting place in the album, right? Like we just left Divers, and now I feel like we're in this weird transition between Divers and the last three songs of the album, which to me feel like a pretty steep slide. Like I don't listen to the last three songs independent of each other ever, I don't think. I think if I listen to them, I listen to all three. And did for a long time only listen to the last three. I think when the album first came out, the last three were immediately my favorite. And I would just do those in rotation. I was just joking to Nikki that like I've been only listening to Sufjan Stevens' Seven Swans, but starting with Seven Swans and then going back to the beginning.
I didn't know that about you for the last three songs of Divers. That's super interesting to me that you were compelled to those three in particular and just like
I
listen to those.
So, because they're incredible.
After this song that we're covering today, shit gets.
Oh my God.
I don't even know how we're going to do it. I mean, it's going to be the next year of I don't know what we're going
to
do.
I was looking at just the lyrics of them very casually the other day and I wanted to text you and be like, Nikki, I don't want to.
I know. It's like, okay, we will get there when we get there. We have a shit ton to say, and we hope that you guys do too. Same Old Man is not that yet. It is the step, as Sam was saying, it is the stepping stone from Divers to that fucking landslide of a time. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So maybe that, so, okay, yeah. I have a have so many questions. But one thing to help us maybe bridge that gap is I have a quote from a Rookie interview that about this song that – why can't I speak? That Joanna – Joanna said some shit about this song, and I'm going to read to you right here. So Rookie asked why or how she chose to cover Same Old Man on the album. And Joanna said, "It was actually a song that I covered years ago when I was touring. I think the first time I performed this song was at an orchestral show at Brooklyn Academy of Music. I've always loved that song, and specifically the Karen Dalton version. The harp version has always been really exciting to me. As I was writing this record, one thing that kept coming up, formally or stylistically, was recontextualizing quotes, fragments of a thing, either newspaper articles or quotes from novels or quotes from poetry. Some of them are not so much quotes, but descriptions of paintings or works of art. The governing principle behind these quotes is this recontextualization. A collaging thing happens, even within one line or two quotes, which might be mashed together in a way that creates a new meaning. Not only does Same Old Man narratively connect to the songs on this record, the city and leaving the city and those sorts of things, but it also takes on a slightly different meaning in terms of the sequencing. The sequencing of the record is important to me, and so the song comes after each song, and the song that's before it slightly alters the meaning. In a way, it was this larger scale version of the same idea of making a bit of a collage out of quotations."
Interesting. I know we've seen this a lot throughout Divers. I'm thinking specifically of the title of the newspaper article about John Perry Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was a direct quote that was borrowed.
In that collaging kind of way.
Yeah.
Where now it's just a line in our song.
Now it's just a line in our song. I'm thinking of the quote that's on the statue in Washington Square Park.
Something like, "We all raise a standard to which the wise and honest soul may repair."
Exactly that, in fact. I'm thinking of the article about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. I think there was something pulled from there too. And then we have Ozymandias. We have lines pulled from both.
Oh, that's right.
Of those two, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of collaging going on in this album. And that, so I read this quote by myself, but there's something when you read it that makes my brain just go, wow. Now I'm thinking that we are taking this entire song as a piece of someone else's work. So there's a pretty, we'll go through this, I'm sure, but there's a pretty robust history to the lyrics of the song and the song itself. And we are now gluing them onto our Divers album.
Yeah.
Why?
Right. Right. What is this giving us? I mean, the why can be asked in all those examples that we talked about with, like, why are you doing this? And so lots of those examples that we talked about were from Sapochnikov, this reframing of what people had said. But also, sorry, I wanted to mention too, in Waltz of the 101st Lightborn, there was also the Highlands Away, My John.
Yep.
Which was a sea shanty, like a traditional sea shanty that had. So like giving this new meaning to these, I don't want to say themes, but like these little bits of truth that were important to people who came before us, I think is important for our purposes here. And I think that, I don't know, a tentative theory I have is something about it driving home the message of like, none of this is new. Our experiences as humans in these individual bodies who think that we're living these like discrete, unique experiences, like that is an illusion. We're all sort of just recycling the same experiences, repurposing the same shit, the same material, whether it be like earth stuff or like emotions or like stories or perceptions. It's all just this one thing that we're all just like repurposing. I don't know. That's a theory I have.
I love that. I love that, especially because it does feel like it brings more power to that theory of this song as a bridge.
Mm.
Like that this was stuck here because it reinforces that cyclical theme. And I do think the song as a whole fits really well into a lot of the themes of the album. Not only the cyclical nature, but we have like New York. We have this idea of like time as a cycle and reincarnation.
Dying too, I think.
Death and dying. Yeah. Seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we also have the connection to Karen Dalton, who we know, is it Joanna who has mentioned it before?
Yes. Yeah, she mentions it in the quote that I just read, but also she's mentioned Karen Dalton like 1,000 times. When people ask her about her influences, she always mentions Karen Dalton. And so I saw, I think, Rachel Parent on Blessing All the Birds. I think it was Rachel, maybe it was Melissa, that Joanna was performing this song as early as 2008. So it's not something she discovered when she was doing Divers, or even discovered as a thing to perform herself. She's been doing this, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. So even though this song has gone through a lot of changes lyrically over time, I do think that another reason it's included here is as a kind of tribute to Karen Dalton.
Yeah.
And Joanna's love for her and her talent and influence on the world of music. And she's a really interesting character. So there's kind of two camps from what I've read about Karen Dalton. There's that, I think both camps agree that she was an incredibly talented person, but also someone who was incredibly shy. So someone who really didn't like to perform at all. I read multiple places that like the only reason that her album, I think it was In My Own Time, which was 1971, was recorded because they kind of tricked her into recording it. Like they had said they weren't recordings and they ran through the album, but they were, and that was the only way that she was able to do it. So the first camp is kind of like, okay, she was this incredibly talented person, but she was very troubled. I'm putting troubled in quotation marks, that she not only had a really difficult upbringing, but she had children very young. She had a really difficult life, and all of this trauma led to a life of addiction, and she ended up dying houseless on the streets. Aww. And that's kind of where her story ends. And then there's another camp that is like, yes, she was an incredibly talented person. She was very shy. She did have problems with addiction, but she was someone who was very loved and she was supported by her friends to the end. And it seems like that first camp's impression of her as troubled has sort of taken over the narrative of her life. And holy moly, does that tie into the themes of Sepahkonikin and remembrance and how people's stories are told, how people are chosen, how people choose to remember these historical figures. Because I will say, out of 9 of the 10 articles I read, the impression was from Camp 1 that, she was very troubled and her life was very sad and awful. And she was never famous. And she was never like, incredibly popular in her lifetime. But I think my impression was that was because she preferred it that way.
Interesting. She was famous enough that I think I saw this in the Blessing All the Birds article, but that Bob Dylan in his autobiography talked about singing with her, complimented her. So yeah, it's interesting to think that there is that division in narratives, and like it's neither narrative is her own, right? We don't hear from her.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, as you said, Sam, that theme of like not hearing from the women on this album is such a theme. And so excellent, excellent meta tying in.
Yeah, thanks. So this is from a Timeline article that is titled, "With a scorched earth voice and a tragic downfall, Karen Dalton's music reflected her life." So we immediately have this lens of like, shit goes bad, right? Her story is awful. So some quotes from this are, Dalton hailed from Enid, Oklahoma, a small city in the north of the state and part of what was known as the Cherokee Outlet. The half-Cherokee, half-Irish singer was making music all her life, though she ultimately fell in love with the banjo and the 12-string guitar. Those are the instruments she brought with her when she made her way to New York City around 1960 and started playing the coffee houses and tiny smoky folk venues of Greenwich Village. She was in her early 20s, already with two failed marriages in her rearview mirror and two small children she'd born in her teens. This lens makes me really angry. From what I read about her marriages, she was not treated well. And so the fact that she's also from a small Oklahoma town, right? I'll just keep going. Dalton is most often, this is from the same Timeline article, Dalton is most often compared to Billie Holiday for the stripped-down, melancholic intensity of her vocals and the anguish she seems to be letting the listener in on. But Dalton's voice has a brittleness that Holiday's was missing, a dusty, uneven, and unvarnished quality that fit with her country upbringing, her short temper, her missing teeth, the result, according to her daughter, of Dalton's attempt to break up a fight between two of her boyfriends, and the dependencies on alcohol and heroin that came to dog her. So, we have this framing of kind of poor her.
Yeah.
Right? And then this is from a Vice article, which again is titled Karen Dalton, the most tragically beautiful folk singer you've probably never heard of. Her debut album was only recorded because Fred Neil tricked her into thinking that there was no tape rolling and that it was simply a rehearsal. Her sophomore album, In My Own Time, did not do as well as expected. Maybe it was the infusion of pop production into the mix. Maybe it was the fact that, even though Dalton brought her two teenage children, her dog and her horse, to upstate New York to ease her mind, she still couldn't relax. The album failed commercially and Dalton drifted away. And then this is not very nice to read. So just remember that. She'd always had issues with drugs and alcohol. She ended up on the streets for years, lost most of her teeth, her relationships, and faded. Some sources say Lucy J. Dalton, a fellow singer and friend who adopted her last name in Dalton's honor, got Dalton's guitars out of the pawn shops and sent her to rehab in Texas. Others say she had been battling AIDS for 8 years and was in the care of Peter Walker before her death. Either way, what is confirmed is that she died on the streets of New York in 1993. Okay. I want to combat that with, there was an article, oh, I hope I have it, this, yes, so this is an interview with Joe Loop. So the interviewer asks, how long did you remain in touch with Karen Dalton? When was the last time you saw her? And they say, the last time I saw her was probably the mid-70s. I did talk to her in the early 90s, I think a few months before she died. I don't exactly know how long before she was. I guess you've read all the stuff of her dying homeless on the streets of New York. The interviewer says, yeah. And Joe Loop says, I'd like to correct that. It isn't true. She was actually staying in a house owned by Peter Walker, a guitar player who lives up in Woodstock, and he also had a place in New York. She was staying at his house and had been for quite some time. She was there when I got a hold of her. And she told me, matter-of-factly, when I called her, that she was staying in this cabin this guy got me to croak in. Those were her words. We chatted and all that. Her son Lee was with her, taking care of her. And actually, when she passed away, Peter Walker was with her in the room, and he didn't realize she was gone for a while. Anyway, that was a little bit of a different story than the one you'd actually hear. So Joe Loop is confirming that she did die of AIDS, but is changing the narrative and offering up that she was not homeless, as 9 out of 10 articles noted. No, she was staying with a friend who was caring for her since her diagnosis, and her son was with her. But I just wanted to include that interview because I feel like it's important to question that history of Karen Dalton, right? And I feel like that's one of the reasons why this song was included on the album. That's my thesis.
So your thought is that it's included on the album because of Karen Dalton's embodiment, or Karen Dalton's stories embodiment of the rewriting of history that is sort of exemplified in like Sapokonikin and throughout the album, actually, more generally.
Yeah. And as someone who does a lot of research for these albums, I'm assuming that Joanna knows a fuller history of Karen Dalton's life and wanted to honor her in some way.
Yeah. So this, I love that theory, and thank you for the research into her life, because I didn't know that there were the two different interpretations of the way that it might have gone. There's two Blessing All the Birds articles on this. There's one from their Delving Into Divers series, which is like their initial impressions of each of the songs. And then there's one about the chiasmus, the like mirrored poetical device used throughout this album. And the song that that Same Old Man is paired with is Goose Eggs. So there's an article on that too. And they had a very similar theory that you did, Sam, in the context of like, not in the context of her life being rewritten as a tragic story when it wasn't, but they both noted, and I think Rachel in particular, but definitely both of them, noted we know about Karen Dalton primarily in the context of men talking about her. And so it's not her story from her mouth that we know, or even not even her story, sorry. Just like we don't know about her existence because of her own merits, at least exactly. Historically speaking. We know it because like a bunch of guys were like, hey, look at this woman who's kind of cool. But like that just sort of serves to highlight socially, we're paying attention to what Bob Dylan is saying. We're paying attention to what Devendra Banhart is saying. It's not like we were initially focused on Karen Dalton herself before these men drew our attention to that. So Rachel Parent says, these articles almost exclusively focus on Karen through the male gaze that the artist mentioned above, while focusing heavily on the tragedy, quote unquote, of her life. Also, Rachel points out that a bunch of the articles are careful to say, like, hey, she was beautiful. This is like a noteworthy feature of her life, that she was this beauty of the 60s. And like, she sort of made up to be like this, oh, beautiful, tragic figure instead of, you know, a person with nuance.
And I don't want to discount that her life was hard and tragic either, right? Yeah. I very much think that that was part of the story, but the fact that that is what all of these articles are titled and that's what the focus is only serves to take away from her talent and her life as a whole person.
And her work, like her, no one's talking about her work. Joanna shows us her work in this. Yeah. And then also Ribbon Bows, I forgot. Ribbon Bows is a song by Karen Dalton. So it's not obviously a cover of Ribbon Bows, but we've talked about her before.
Yeah, that's where we talked about her. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So Rachel Parent also says, just speaking to what you were just saying, Sam, she has been entirely remembered through the recollections of others, many of them seemingly determined to paint her as a tragic heroine. Her presence on Divers, seeping through Joanna's skillfully accurate vocal delivery and the age-old lyrics, is a reminder that women especially are remembered in very specific ways, often from places of voicelessness.
Yeah. I also noticed that these articles fail to talk about, like, the drug use and alcoholism in general at that time in the folk scene. Like, it's not like she was the only one who was drinking and doing drugs.
Right.
That's an unfair perspective to take, too.
Right. She wasn't singular in her being addicted to shit in the 60s in Greenwich Village. Thank you very much. Yeah. All right. Should we dive into some lyrical stuff?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. I don't have like a comparison prepared of like Joanna's way of singing it with all the previous versions that have been done before, because there's a bunch of previous versions of this traditional song. I do have the ways in which her lyrics differ from Karen Dalton's lyrics, but as you said, and as the Blessing All the Birds women said, Joanna's version is most similar to Karen Dalton's. So I'll highlight when they're different from Karen Dalton's. But before that, the lyrics are like drastically different in some cases. Like there are verses about a raven that I found. This song used to be called something different. is what used to be called Old Man at the Mill.
Yeah.
Like tons of different lyrics. There's bird references that she didn't even include. So you know that she must be focusing on the Karen Dalton version for a reason, because she ignored a owl and a raven that I found in previous versions.
There is, so I'm sure you're looking at the same previous versions. Again, blessing all the birds. Thank you for being everything. Melissa had linked to, Rachel had linked to this website called the Mudcat Cafe. It's an interesting little forum where people were discussing. It's not like especially comprehensive. It's really just like a very casual discussion of people who are obviously very interested in the history of this song.
Mm.
But there's a few interesting little nuggets here.
Okay.
I don't know anything about this realm of music.
It's hard to know anything about, because the nature of folk songs is that we don't credit people, first of all. So there's no like very super clear original source that we can just easily reference. But also these songs are old, old, old. So any records kept about them aren't super easily available with just cursory Google searches like Sam and I do for the podcast. We also are willing to do deeper dives when those links are available, but there's not like a whole lot on this song. So I'm not saying that one cannot find the information, but that it's a bit challenging. One post I found on just a random Facebook Rock and Roll Hall of Fame page, and it says that the mill, the titular mill of the song, is a mill that is about as old as America in Nantucket, Massachusetts, that was built by this one guy who, just as he finished building it, was murdered. And so this other guy used to tend it, and that guy who used to tend it is the same old man, apparently.
Interesting.
Okay, so that's one thing. Old Man at the Mill could be referring to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But as Joanna hinted towards in that interview, quote, like, she's recontextualizing this stuff, right? So let's not get too bogged down in the literal and maybe just get right to the lyrics. The first verse goes as follows. Joanna sings. It's the same old lady putting out the wash, standing in the rain in her Macintosh. Same old lady standing in the rain. The thought of New York was going insane.
I don't really know what to say. So to me, this is kind of like a repetitive cycle thing, right? Same old lady putting out the wash, standing in the rain in her Macintosh. Same old lady standing in the rain. So this is something that happens before and has happened and will continue to happen, right? That's the vibe I get, that the lady hangs out her wash every day, every week. And it's a habit. It's something that repeats.
Right. So, I mean, one of the questions I had was like, who is she the same as? Is she the same as she was yesterday? And like, it's just this sort of like monotonous, like, ugh, every day is the same. This fucking lady every day is hanging out her wash. It's just like this very like this tedium that we all have to go through in our day-to-day lives in order to get like the chores done that need to be done. Or is it this like, and like very, very plausibly that's it. But I was thinking that maybe it could also be the same as it's always been. So again, in keeping with that like sort of theory of like, not necessarily reincarnation exactly, but like that we all have this, there's this more universal experience that we're all drawing upon, and that we're, the perception of us as having these individual unique experiences is just sort of an illusion, that it's all the same recycled content. And so I was thinking maybe it's not just the same as yesterday, but the same as 100 years ago and the same as 1,000 years ago. And mm-hmm. these women are having these like very gendered experiences where like they're doing the domestic stuff. They're in charge of this. And I don't just mean it as a statement on gender, but also a statement on like what it is to be a human that exists now being similar, at least in some respects, to life, the life of someone 1,000 years ago.
I love that. And you still need to go. I put on a raincoat to go outside today. It's still the same shit, still happening. Never stops.
There's also this like weird...
I love when your voice gets
like... Sorry. It's like my like...
No, I love it. There's also...
I don't even know why I do that. I think it's because I'm like, I gotta be so tentative. Yeah. Like here's like a...
I know, it's great. I love it.
Okay, so here's the here's a theory I have maybe about I don't know, about sanity. I have throughout this song, I have this ongoing question about the sanity of the narrator, the sanity of the lady. And I'll get into that in a second, but like regardless of whether the people in this song are fully sane, regardless of that, I feel like as a listener, there's something discombobulating a little bit about this song. There's something slightly, I want to say Dutch angly about this song. So like in movies when instead of shooting straight on, the director like just sort of tilts the camera to the side a little bit. It's often done to give this like disorienting something's a little weird in this scene effect. And I sort of feel like this song is the analog of a Dutch angle where it's just like something's a little off and it's sort of hard to put your finger on. But the thing that made me say that with respect to this verse is that this old lady is putting out her wash, presumably on clothing
hooks.
Clothing lines. Exactly, to dry. But it's raining. So is she putting out the clothes in the rain to dry? And like if she's doing that, lady, shouldn't you be waiting until it stops raining?
Is the rain washing it or have they already been washed?
My thought was that they'd already been washed and that she's hanging this shit up. Yeah, but like why? And then if she's hanging it up to dry in the rain, then like is she insane? And also is she just doing things out of habit and not really paying attention to that? And like that's a statement of one of the things of the song. I don't know. I get some insane vibes though. I do get some not having all of our faculties with us vibes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point because you're wearing a raincoat. Yeah. There's a disconnect there, right? But you're hanging wet clothes in the rain.
Right. Yeah. I had to look up what a Macintosh was, but it's just a raincoat. Mm. Yeah.
You know what? I started rewatching Mad Men recently, and I just watched an episode where they're dealing with the London Fog raincoat company.
Oh, cool.
And also my grandparents are Scottish. And so I feel like when my grandma, when I was young, she'd be like, don't forget your Macintosh. And I'd be like, okay,
cool. So fucking cute. I want to call it a Macintosh. That's so cute. Okay, yeah. So... also the repetition here. So I've seen several people comment on how repetition is a theme throughout this song. And it's sort of like the literal repetition of words. So the same old lady putting out the wash, standing in the rain, the Macintosh, the same old lady standing in the rain. But also standing in the rain is also repeated. So we have same old lady standing in the rain, same old lady standing in the rain. And so that repetition is maybe not only in keeping with the themes of like cyclicalness on this album, but also there's something about it, and I feel like I've said this before with respect to a different song of Joanna's, but there's something about the repetition that also gives me Dutch angle vibes, or like maybe something's amiss here vibes, because it's just like, why are you repeating yourself? Did you forget that you already said this? I just finished reading, by the way, sorry, The Old Man and the Sea by Hemingway. I had never read it before. It was my first time. And he does this, I mean, kind of spoiler alert, but not really, He does this towards the end of the book where he hasn't eaten or drank anything really in days. Actually, he has eaten. But anyways, he hasn't slept. He's like for sure going delusional. And he keeps repeating these things as if they're novel thoughts. And it really drives home this vibe of like, oh God, this old man's losing it. Like he's at his wit's end. He is at this like precipice where if he keeps going, this guy's not going to be okay anymore. Mm-hmm. And Hemingway drives that message home in part by this repetition. He keeps saying like, I wish the boy was here. I wish this. Oh, like the fish is my brother. Like he keeps driving home these messages by repeating them. And I think that maybe the same sort of effect maybe might be happening here.
Mm-hmm.
There is also this, the Joanna quote that I read at the beginning of this episode, where she talks about the song before each song informing what that song is about. And so it like slightly, she says that like the song that comes before slightly alters the meaning of the song at hand. And I was trying really hard to figure out how Divers coming before this song might alter the meaning of Same Old Man. And I have to admit, like I still struggle with that. But all the songs that came before it taken together, I think very much could inform this song, as well as, mm-hmm. as you said, like the triad of You Will Not Take My Heart Alive, A Pin Light Bent, and then In Time as a Symptom coming after, I can super see informing the meaning of this song. And one of the things that came to mind was this idea of dying, especially as it comes up in the last half of the songs on Divers. And I was thinking that like maybe one explanation for why the narrator is a little bit not there is because she's dying throughout this whole song.
Mm-hmm.
So her mental faculties are fading. She talks about her body growing weak. Oh, she talks about mm-hmm. her mind fading. My mind is mm-hmm. fading and my body grows weak. And so mm-hmm. I was wondering if we're seeing this right from the beginning of the song.
I love that.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, maybe.
It's all a big maybe.
It's all a big maybe. I mean, including our interpretation of Divers, the song that we just finished talking about last time. It's weird because we took a little break for the new music. And so it feels like we talked about Divers forever ago. It's like hard to remember exactly what we said about Divers, the song. But one of the things that looking back, given that Same Old Man comes here, looking back at Divers, one of the things that we had talked about a little bit was like the possibility that the narrator in Divers has died or is dying, because she seems to have this omniscient perspective where she's like, look, I was your last one. You don't know my name, but I know your, like just these like very like final sounding things. And so I don't know, maybe we have the same dying person starting this song. Maybe not.
I have another theory as I was looking at another interview I didn't talk about.
Ooh, okay.
So this was an article, this was the Timeline article again. And part of the article is talking about the end of Dalton's life. It says, after years in New York, Dalton relocated to rural Colorado, where she and her third husband lived in a tiny cabin near the abandoned town of Somerville. There she descended further into her addictions. Eventually, she made her way back to upstate New York, where she lived in a trailer near the town of Woodstock. According to the biographical quotes and notes at the beginning of Karen Dalton's Songs, Poems, and Writings, Dalton was struggling with drugs and was HIV positive in the 1980s. The combination made her fragile as a wisp. Still, she commuted to the city, worked at low-paying jobs, and struggled to stay alive. Dalton died from AIDS-related complications in 1993 at the age of 55. Leaving a rich oeuvre, it would take decades to bring fully into the public view. And still, relatively little is known about the reclusive singer, who owned very few possessions and never gave an interview, though her tragically premature death can seem prefigured in the haunting music she made. As she sings, almost whimpering on Blues on the Ceilings, I'll never get out of these blues alive. This made me think about how when Joanna's music first came out and people were describing her in a very specific way. What's the kind of things people said? Like when Milk-Eyed Mender just came out, people just were calling elven. Her like elven, sprite-like.
Childlike.
Like childlike. And how I remember reading that bothered her, that bothered Joanna, that like it was putting her in this certain box. And I feel like the same thing is happening to Dalton here because she never gave an interview. We never have her perspective, right? So we're taking what we have of her and we are putting this lens onto her as this tragic, almost whimpering on this one song. I don't know. It just made me think of how people perceived Joanna Newsom at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And how people are still perceiving Karen Dalton.
Yeah, I totally think there are similarities there. And I think that I've even heard Joanna say something like, in terms of my vocal influences and like idols, like the people I look up to vocally, I think she's mentioned Karen Dalton. So I think she's herself made an explicit connection between, yeah, people's perception of, like, even the way that some of the things you were reading from the articles that were written about Dalton, like, people would describe her voice as like, I forget even what the words were, like raspy and stuff and just like harsh and reflective of this country upbringing, which like maybe, but also like there's this.
It's just her voice.
Yeah, it's just her voice. Exactly. It's just her voice. And like there's this beauty in all these voices. Like the assumption that voices need to sound the same or they're diverging from what they should sound like is just sort of. Yeah, I don't know. It's just very basic. It's very norm forward.
Yeah, it lacks a depth
of
analysis, right? It's just a very shallow analysis. What about the thought of New York?
Was yeah.
Really insane?
This is one thing I wanted to highlight in terms of differences between Karen Dalton's version and Joanna's version. So Karen Dalton's version says, same old lady standing in the rain. So the whole verse is identical other than the fact that Karen Dalton uses the word hanging out the wash, whereas Joanna says putting out the wash. But the last line is different a little bit. Karen Dalton says, and I thought New York was going insane. Joanna says, the thought of New York was going insane. So there's an interesting shift of who's going insane between Dalton's and Newsom's version. Dalton says she thinks the city's going insane. Joanna says the thought itself is going insane, which to me makes it seem like the speaker, again, is losing her faculties a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not the thought that goes insane. It's either the city or the narrator.
Yeah. I didn't notice that difference.
Yeah. The thought of New York was going insane. It like...
It's like perseverating.
Yeah, exactly. It gives me this impression of that the same... Like the... I was going to say the same old man in the sea. But no, the old man in the sea.
That's a collab we don't yet have. Though, would be an incredible name for Janu 5.
Not bad.
Thank you so much for listening to what is part one of two on Same Old Man. We talked a lot more than we thought we would, so part two is coming next week. As we take a step towards the end of the album, we would love to encourage you to send us your thoughts and feelings and tin hat theories. You can do that by emailing us at ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. You can send us messages on Instagram and follow us if you want at A Hopeless Endeavor Podcast. You can join us on Facebook, which is A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom Podcast, and Patreon. We just recorded a whole episode about Bombs Are Whistling. And Nikki runs our Patreon and she does an incredible job. And it is patreon.com/ahopelessendeavor.
Go check it out, maybe, if you want to. That's, I think, it. We, as Sam said, we'd love to hear from you. So reach out. This shit gets so intense. We need your help with it. All right. Have a good rest of your days. If you're listening to this on Saturday when it's released, enjoy your weekend. We're so grateful for you. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, so here is our little preview of the discussion that Sam and I have about bombs are whistling. This can be found on Patreon, which is linked in the show notes. But yeah, here's a little 5-minute splurb. I don't think splurb is a word, but anyway, here we go. I love your comparison to Kingfisher, because especially with the bomb, I think that Kingfisher is the only other song in which she explicitly references a bomb. And I also don't quite know what the bombs here refer to, other than being just like fucking war. Like, it is like adrenaline at peak height. Like, I'm not sure. I don't know. What do you think?
As a pretty anxious person, I think I took the references of the bomb to be just like, oh, there's a line that's the death, the doom, the leaden looming dread is always near. I took that either to be like the worry that this creature I have just born is going to face all of this, all of these things in the real world that are very real and awful and hard, like war, but also just like death and disease and whatever. But also just like the mother's anxiety about keeping that baby safe. Like, okay, now, whew, I did it. You're here. Now what?
Yeah. That second interpretation that you just said is how I took that part too. Like, as someone who had a kid, has a baby, like, and who is anxious, as you said, like, as an anxious person, that line in particular, the death, the doom, the leaden looming dread is always near, but I love you and you are here, especially when it comes after, like, the nurse is saying things that she can't understand and presumably this baby being taken, like, to be put in an incubator or something, for me speaks to so much, just like, holy shit. Like, now there's this thing that exists in the world that, like, it would be the most inconceivably horrible thing to lose. And, like, because of that, you have this, like, there's this new depth of vulnerability where you're just like, oh, like, now I can be hurt worse than I could have ever been hurt before, because there's this, like, physical manifestation of, like, a wound of mine out there in the world. It's like this, like, really sensitive, fucking terrifying thing where just, like, God, nothing can happen to this. It's so scary. But, like, let's just focus on the, like, pure joy that comes with as well.
The physical manifestation of a wound is such a crazy way to put it, because we're talking about a narrator who's been flayed, right?
Yeah.
So are we saying that, like, our narrator has been flayed because their skin is now in the baby or something, that, like, they lost something?
Right. I like that. That, like, they, and, like, there's a very real way in which you get fucking split open to bring that baby into the world. I like that. Yeah, maybe she has no skin because she had to sort of, Well, it reminds me this the new skin thing reminds me of, I mean, unsurprisingly, and I don't think this is an original thought, but it reminds me of Occident when she says something about having no skin. With my no skin, I make do with my no skin, I think she says.
Yeah.
And in that song, we talked about how it's just probably her being so vulnerable. Like, she has no more clothes. Not only does she not have clothes to, like, shield herself from the world, but, like, she doesn't even have skin. Like, it's just, like, this opened wound, exposed nerve, hypersensitivity. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's that same kind of vibe, especially with imagery of being exposed to the wind like that.
Yeah, I think that vulnerability is a huge piece there.
Yeah, and just like high-pitched sensitivity and like pain.
Yes.
And also like that she's saying it's not your fault that I ain't got no skin.
Who are we talking to? The baby?
I don't know. I don't know.
It burns like salt. Like, to put salt on a wound is such an awful image too.
Yeah.
Shit's fucked up.
Shit is fucked up. I love too that this was our introduction to like new Joanna music. She's like, don't worry, you guys. I'm going to be talking about flayed skulls right from the beginning of this conversation. Like, don't worry. I haven't lost it.